I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Congressman Peter Welch has served in the U.S. House for the past 12 years, and this year he is seeking his seventh term in Congress. But a Republican U.S. House candidate, Anya Tino, thinks the time has come for a fresh voice in Washington, and she hopes to replace Welch in the November election. During campaign 2018, we're talking to all of the statewide candidates on Vermont Public Radio, and today our guest is GOP congressional candidate Anya Tino. Anya, great to have you here.
Thank you, Bob. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, we do want to mention this is Anya's first run for public office. She lives in West Charleston, Vermont. She's an advertising executive at the Newport Daily News. If you'd like to learn more about her candidacy, visit her website, anyaforushouse.com. We'll also have a link to that website at vpr.net. So, Anya, if you look at election results over the past decade or so, one might conclude that Peter Welch is a pretty popular politician. I looked in the last four elections, he's been reelected with at least two-thirds of the vote in every election. So, if that's the case, why is it time for a change?
Well, I did look at those numbers, too, and partly what I saw is that he has not had really strong challenges, especially last year. So I'm changing that this year. It is time for a new representation just because Peter Welch has demonstrated that he's out of touch with the everyday Vermonter. He voted against the Tax and Jobs Act. He voted against the Farm Bill not once but twice this year alone. And those two bills alone, I won't get into all of the ones that he's voted against, but those two bills alone have significant impact on Vermont and our economy. We have workers in many companies that have received benefits from the Tax and Jobs Act because it was passed without his vote. And we needed the Farm Bill to pass immediately to help the farmers be protected with the milk protection and all of that. So those two votes showed that he didn't understand the need of the people. He was voting party and not for the people.
Now, there's some people who look at the tax bill and refer to it as a giveaway to millionaires.
I don't think so. I know that some people may have that opinion, but I don't think so. Personally, I'm not a millionaire, and it benefited me. So I'm so far from a millionaire that that's not even funny. But Peter Welch is a millionaire, and he voted against it. So I would think if it had benefited millionaires, he probably would have wanted it.
He was also, as you mentioned, very critical of the Farm Bill in the House. He thought it was going to be very detrimental to Vermont's dairy industry. You disagree?
I disagree that stalling at the last minute was the best way to help the Vermont dairy industry. Government subsidizing of farming is not the direction that we want to go with agriculture. It's done in other countries, and frankly, it does not work that well. So that part of it, I can understand he may have been thinking that. It is not detrimental to have a milk protection in place for when the cost of production skyrockets and the cost of the product drops. I don't see how he saw that as detrimental to the farmer.
So you were, I think, referring to the system in Canada where there are production quotas.
Yes.
So that the price doesn't fluctuate like a roller coaster.
They control the price. However, the price is very high. I live up by the Canadian border, and I can tell you every single time that I go to the supermarket, Canadian citizens come to America to buy milk and gas just due to the price. If they can't afford to buy milk and gas in their own country or choose to do it here because it's more affordable, that's a failing system. That's my view on subsidized farming. They also control quota. It's all about what the government wants them to produce. If they're producing too much, they have to dump it. If they're producing too little, they have to up it. It's a constant government control. And American citizens like their freedom. We don't want the government sitting in our living room saying, this is what you're going to do today, and this is how you're going to do it.
What would you like to do very specifically to improve the economy and create more good-paying jobs?
Very specifically, we need to work on encouraging businesses to come to the state of Vermont. Right now, they will go to New Hampshire. They will go to almost any other state than ours. We have a very unfriendly approach to business. Taxes, regulations, all of those things prohibit new business from wanting to start up in the state of Vermont. And we need to encourage entrepreneurship and small business as well. Having a healthy economy is based on a strong workforce. Our young working class people are leaving the state for better opportunity elsewhere because they can't find it here. They're leaving their homes, their families, their friends, everything that they know. They love to the state. They would love to live here, but they can't afford to. They can't afford to buy a home. They can't find the opportunity they need. And we need to change that. We need to encourage opportunities. We need to build an economy based on business. And we need to strengthen the agricultural community. It is one of the tenets of our state's economy.
So
it always has been.
How do you do that? How do you encourage young people to stay in the state of Vermont rather than leave?
With jobs and opportunity that we would work on bringing in. If they had the opportunities that they have in other states right down the road from them, they would choose to stay here. They want to be around their friends and their family.
And we were talking earlier about agriculture, and what we're seeing now is kind of a tariff war going on, and who knows how this is going to work out with NAFTA and Canada. For the most part, do you think the president's emphasis on free trade and tariffs has been a good thing?
I think for the most part, yes. I don't think that anybody can really argue with the fact that we were being taken advantage of in trade previously. We had very unfair trade agreements with many countries, and he is simply trying to straighten them out, get a balance, some equality involved in that. And whenever there's a shift like that, there's going to be uncomfortable times. Change is difficult. But at the end, I think that we will have a much healthier trade agreement with these countries. I think that we will have a better economy. And ultimately, we'll have a better relationship with them. I believe that.
So for the most part, do you think the Trump presidency has been a good thing for this country?
I do. I think that it has been successful. Everything that Donald Trump promised in his campaign, he has worked to achieve. He has kept his promises. He has worked to better our economy, better our foreign relations, make sure that we are not, I know you're probably laughing over better foreign relations, but it is true. We needed to reassert ourselves on the national stage, and he has done that very well, on the international stage, so forth.
You know, some people think that politics has just become so much more polarized with the Trump presidency, with his tweets and some of his approaches to leadership. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that.
I think the politics became polarized before President Trump. I think that he came out very strong, came out swinging, so to speak, because the momentum on the other side was so strong, he needed to create momentum for the Republican Party, and he has done that. So I believe that the polarization started long before Donald Trump was in office, and I think that it continues due to the fact that people hold such strong opinions on how the country should be run. He's very strong on Constitution, very strong on freedom-based, and the Democrats are more on the globalist, progressive plane, and those two ideas don't meet well. They just don't mix. And that's why they're polarized.
So I think Vermont is one of the states that supports Donald Trump the least of all 50 states in the country.
That's possible.
So from just a reality point of view, if that's the case, how do you feel you can be successful with the message that you have?
I think it's important to note that there were a good amount of Vermonters that actually voted for Donald Trump. We were a blue state because, let's face it, you know, there's more Democrat concentration in Bennington, Chittenden County, Brattleboro, all of those places. But I believe that my message to the Vermonters about what I can do for them stands alone. Whether I support Donald Trump or not, which I do, my message about helping our economy, helping our agricultural community. I was raised on a farm. My first job right out of high school was milking cows. Nobody understands agriculture like somebody who's done it. My message about protecting our constitutional rights and protecting the rights of our citizens, all of that is something that old-time Vermont values embraced. And that is what I'm striving to do here. I'm striving to bring Vermont back to what they originally wanted to be and what they were, and what the apple cart has kind of been upset over that. We have a lot of people coming in from out of state that want a particular agenda. And I think that the true Vermonters feel that they are being pushed aside and that their beliefs and their worries and their concerns are not being addressed. And I'm here to address those for them.
Let's start with Aaron, who is calling from Arlington. Hi, Aaron. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm calling one. I'm very appreciative of federal office that's doing great congratulations, but my call is primarily focused on economic development in the southern part of the state, and I'm very curious where you stand on interstate railroad development. A couple years ago, there was a really strong push for rail, commuter rail from New York through the southern part of Bennington County all the way up through Rutland to Burlington and possibly into Canada. And I really believe that that would bring the next generation of travelers and commuters a whole different level of tourism to the southern part of the state.
Okay, Aaron, thank you very much for your phone call. We're starting to break up there. But we definitely got your question. Your thoughts about increased train service connecting New York, Vermont, Canada?
I think that it would be beneficial to the towns that were along the rail route. I think that it would bring people in. It would give them an opportunity for traveling. And it would connect us with an opportunity to perhaps transport goods at a more economic rate. For instance, I was recently doing a farm tour in Franklin County, and they were telling me that a lot of the product that they make and sell, they have to send to New York City, which they do currently by truck. Perhaps a train running to New York would be somehow beneficial to them in trucking their product more economically. I think that as far as tourism goes, that's a beautiful section of the state to take a train ride through, so it probably would draw some tourism.
So is this an area where government subsidy would be okay?
I think it would be an independent company that would choose to do it and reap the reward from it. The government could definitely provide some kind of incentive for the train company to want to do that. But for instance, Amtrak might want to expand or somehow in that direction take care of that. I think that in any opportunity that we offer, it would be best to have independent people run it rather than the government. I'm for smaller government, generally speaking, but offering an incentive to bring that kind of revenue to the state would be important.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Patrick, who is calling from Enosburg Falls. Hi, Patrick. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask Anya about her opinion about the Second Amendment. I've heard she's very strong on it. It's one of my major concerns. I'm a huge proponent of electing non-professional politicians to office. I think electing the real people, the people who know about the problems of Vermont, they're the people who should be making the decisions. But I just wanted to know, I wanted to hear it from her, what she thinks on the Second Amendment. That's very important to me.
Okay, Patrick, thanks very much for your phone call. A couple of different items I think that Patrick is looking for answers to. One might be expanded background checks. Would that be a good idea?
What I think Patrick was interested in knowing is my stance on the Second Amendment, and that is I am pro-Second Amendment. I believe that the Second Amendment, as written in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, is what we need to embrace. As far as background checks go, we do have background checks currently. Whether we expand that to include mental health or not is a subject that has been discussed widely. The problem with that is that excluding people from owning weapons without basis without proof or evidence of a problem is infringing upon their constitutional rights. So I do support the Second Amendment as written. I believe that we can protect our citizens and not infringe upon the rights of the gun owners or of anybody who wishes to protect themselves and their families and their property. As far as having a politician elected that knows the people, I thank him for that. I talk to people every day in my job. I talk to business owners. I talk to friends of mine. I talk to Democrats who are happy that I'm running just because it's a fresh voice and somebody local that they can, they see me shopping in my grocery store and they come up to talk about the issues with me. So I think that I have a connection to the people that is beneficial to me and to them.
So what do you think about the laws that the Vermont legislature passed this past winter concerning gun control?
I think that in essence, they were trying to do something good. But what actually happened was they punished law-abiding citizens for an act committed by a person or was attempting to commit. The law-abiding citizens are the ones that suffered. He got turned loose on his own, on his father's recognizance, and we now have the fallout of this. That I don't think that it was effective. I don't think that raising the minimum age to 21, when you can serve in the military and you can join the police force at 18, is fair in any way. I think that at 18, you're considered an adult. You need to be an adult. You need to be responsible. Whether that includes some kind of firearm safety training in high school or some form of learning how to properly use weapons and have respect for them and what they can do, I think those are all things that we could look into. But I don't think that punishing the masses for one person's act is an effective tool at stopping a further problem. Anytime a criminal wants to get a gun, they will be able to get a gun. That's the unfortunate truth.
And the Vermont law did allow someone under 21 between the ages of 18 and 21 to be able to own a gun if they did a hunter safety course.
I understand that, but the masses being told that you're not allowed to at 21 is what I have umbrage with.
Let's talk to Tim, who's calling from Barnard. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to speak directly to the candidate in regards to what they would do or what she would do going to Washington to help support the forest products industry. I hear you discuss agricultural law, but I want to remind the viewers and anyone running right now that forest products industry logging is agricultural also, and it's renewable energy, and we are getting hammered. We are probably one of the most affected, non-subsidized, which I do not want to be subsidized, industries in our state. And we have a huge impact on the economics. And my question directly is referencing to the biomass industry is getting hammered for renewable energy when natural gas and Hydro-Quebec is infiltrating our power grid. What would you do to help us? And I propose a forest products bill to protect that, which basically affects every single market in the forest products all the way to the lumber we buy to build our house.
Okay, Tim, thank you very much for your phone call.
Thank you, Tim. I'm glad that you brought up forest products being part of agriculture. I do include that when I'm thinking of agriculture, so I'm glad that you said that. I think that you are very correct in stating that the forest industry affects everything right down to the cost of homes. And I am all for strengthening that in the state of Vermont. I think that having a bill that protects the forest lands for use of logging is important. I think that it is renewable energy due to the fact that you can plant trees as you go. And it is one of the most effective heat sources for the state. I will say that wood is one of the warmest heat sources we have. It's also one of the most readily available. And it's more affordable than many other options for Vermonters when they're talking about heating in the winter. So all of these things combined, I agree that forestry is one of the most important things that we have in the state to offer and to strengthen our economy. And I would work towards protecting that industry.
I wanted to talk to you about healthcare. Congressman Welch says that he believes health care is a right and not a privilege as such. He supports the creation of a government-financed health care system. He likes to call it Medicare for All. He says the administrative costs of Medicare are far less than many for-profit health insurance companies. What are your thoughts about that?
I think that it's important to single out the word Medicare for All. Single that out right there. The government subsidizes Medicare. They pay the hospital and so forth. They pay the hospital at a lesser rate than they would ordinarily pay for actual insurance. So if you had Blue Cross or Blue Shield and you have Medicare, when you get treated under Medicare, they're going to prorate that to the hospital. The hospital provides their services at that rate, and then they bill Blue Cross Blue Shield accordingly to make up the difference. If they are doing Medicare for All, the hospital has no way of recouping any additional revenue that is going to help them maintain staying open, hiring doctors, hiring staff. You have to have – I'm trying to put this in the right words here. You have to have competitiveness in a market in order to reduce the amount of money that is going to be charged for a product. If you are the only show in town, you can charge what you want. And I think that there is some concept that if the government is paying for everything, oh, it's a blank check. We can write it. But the government is not independently wealthy. We, the taxpayer, pay for everything that the government does. Every single thing that we, the government, would put out, the taxpayer opens their wallet and they pay the tax for that. So we are essentially still paying for healthcare. We're just taking any choice out of it. We're taking any competitive market out of it. And the government cannot afford to pay for everybody's healthcare without recouping that money in some form, and that would be in form of taxes. So ultimately, I think it hurts the American citizen.
If Representative Welch was here, he would say that it will provide many more people with comprehensive preventative care, and that by doing that, you will actually lower overall health care costs.
I think that preventative care is important to lower costs, but I also think that you have to take into account emergency medicine. You have to take into account major illness that requires long-term care, all of these things. You cannot eliminate all of them through preventative care. It's important to have preventative care and to strive towards lessening the risks. I think that we need to be looking into what the underlying causes are of some of our most prevalent diseases in this country to see how we can cut it off at the root so we are not having constant treatment for something that could be eliminated. That is where I think our focus needs to go. And preventative care is necessary for maintaining your health, but it is not the answer for major health crises.
Right at the outset of the program, when I asked you why you were running, you mentioned the tax bill and the farm bill. And we got this email from Katie, who writes, "I'm a farmer in Vermont who wrote and called Representative Welch's office urging him not to sign the farm bill in its previous iterations. It would have cut funding for young farmers, organic farmers, cut access to food stamps. Vermont has done a great job in expanding programs to help low-income Vermonters gain access to healthy local organic food. And the farm bill that Representative Welch voted against would have hurt these efforts. What would you do to support more young people to enter agriculture and help them stay here? How would you support Vermont's organic farmers?"
I think that organic farming in the state of Vermont has been very good for the dairy industry and for the vegetable, for the entire industry. I think that it's important. And I think that people want organic food. They want to know that they are getting a high-quality product. I'm also very much in favor of grass-fed products and sustainable agriculture. I think all of those are important. I'm 100% in favor of all of that. And I would encourage that we would provide a market for that in the state. and try to make it more affordable through lowering production costs. If you lower production costs and the product does not cost as much, people would be more readily able to obtain these products at a reasonable rate, and I think that's important. I also think that it's important to note that reducing the SNAP benefits in the Farm Bill was not necessarily the case. It would have required working 20 hours a week in order to obtain these benefits, with provisions made for people with disabilities or with small children that could not make that. I don't think that it's unreasonable to ask somebody to work 20 hours a week and in order to receive assistance rather than doing absolutely no work.
Let me ask you a question about the president's immigration policies. Mm-hmm. He wants to build a wall along the Mexican border. It's estimated to cost between $25 and $40 billion. Do you support that idea?
I think that a wall would benefit us. I think that it would benefit the Border Patrol and Customs in preventing illegal immigration. And I do think that the cost, if you look at what we spend right now on border security, the cost of a wall would be a portion of that over a period of time compared to what we put out every year. If we built a wall and it improved our ability to stop illegal immigration, it would vastly reduce the amount of money that we had to spend on border security.
And what about the president's policy of separating families?
It's important to note that these children that were separated from their families, many of them were victims of trafficking. They were victims of being sent here without a parent, all of these things. We were simply trying to sort through what the failed immigration policies of the previous administration created. If you have strong immigration laws originally, what happened on the southern border could not actually happen. And we needed to take these children into a safe area where we could make sure that they were cared for and fed and in safety so that we could work through. And that's why we did DNA testing and all of these things, to make sure that they were actually being sent out with their parent and not somebody who was going to traffic them.
Because the latest report is about 1,200 of these children have not been reunited with their families, and who knows when they will be.
I can assure you they're actively working to reunite these children, because we do not wish to be the caretaker for 1,200 children without their parents over a long period of time. They are working towards settling them. And I'm assuming that if they are unable to locate the parents are either not coming forth to claim these children, or their parents were not in this country to begin with, and these children might be the victims of trafficking. I think that all of those are possibilities. If there's difficulty in locating family members, you have to ask yourself why.
Let me just change the subject to the Senate Judiciary Committee in the remarkable hearing that took place yesterday concerning allegations of sexual assault that have been brought against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. Did you have a chance to watch that?
I have watched parts of it. I was working when the actual – I didn't watch it live. Yeah. Let's put it that way. But
– who do you believe?
I will say this. First of all, no type of violent sexual predation should be tolerated. Do I believe that Brett Kavanaugh committed this act? I think that the timing politically of this accusation is very suspicious. I think that if this was in true fact in her mind, going to law enforcement would have been the way to go rather than taking it to a political place with the Democratic committee. It was aptly called a circus. No matter how you look at it or who you believe, this has been a circus. And if the Democrats do believe this woman, then they should be ashamed of themselves for dragging her through a public hearing on television over the course of 2 weeks, having her name dragged out. And they should also be ashamed of themselves if they did not believe these allegations, that they are smearing a good man and tormenting his family over this. This should have been a private matter that was discussed with law enforcement and never come to what it has become. It never should have. As far as Brett Kavanaugh, I think that he's a very qualified judge. Many people support him. Many people have vouched for his character. And I think that being tried in the court of public opinion is unconstitutional.
So Representative Welch has said about this issue that there really needs to be an FBI investigation. And we heard that from the Democrats on the committee as well, that would be the most fair thing to do, both to Judge Kavanaugh and to Dr. Ford, is have an investigation. Let's find out where it leads. Would that be a good idea?
It's important to note that Brett Kavanaugh has been visited by the FBI 6 times. In the course, anybody who is going to the Supreme Court is vetted. I seriously doubt that an investigation where they go and ask these specific questions is going to turn up anything that the FBI hasn't already looked into. They carefully look into these people to find these things out ahead of time. And the Democrats asking for an investigation is simply an attempt to stall. They're hoping to delay his nomination until after the midterms with the hope that they will gain seats. And I don't believe that will happen. So I think that at this point in time, it is an unnecessary change. If you can't in 6 times find any evidence of wrongdoing, I don't see that one more time is going to change that.
Well, the Democrats said yesterday that those background checks didn't look for any of this because they were not aware of it. So that why not do
I
it
seriously
now?
Doubt they were not comprehensive. The FBI is a very thorough organization, and they would have looked for anything that could have come up to cause difficulty in his nomination. They would have looked for anything that would be a difficult issue. And I think that it would have come up if they talked to friends and acquaintances. This definitely would have been mentioned had it been an issue.
Anya Tino is the Republican candidate for the U.S. House. If you'd like to learn more about her campaign, visit her website, AnyaForUSHouse.com. Anya, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me.